This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Good morning, everybody. 8 o'clock hour on Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. In for Sean Pendergast this morning, I'm Sean Bajani. Catch me sometimes at night, Area 45, 8 to midnight. Though typically today, Friday, happy Friday, by the way, usually on 10 to midnight. We are foregoing our 10 to midnight, as far as I know. Today, but we'll see you next week, and we've got you for another couple hours between now and 10 o'clock this morning. 713-5724-610, 5724-610. Call or text the 5-Hour Energy fan line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. The aftermath of Aziz. Seth, I haven't said this yet, but it's the case. We all know this. When something like a fight and the extracurricular happen in a football game, it spills over into other things. Quickly, quote-unquote fans, fanatics, trolls, needlers on social media, what have you, will make it about something that it's just not or shouldn't be. And you're familiar to this, but Patrick Creighton, when I brought this up a couple of nights ago, was not at the time, but Aziz Alshire, even pre his collage post on Instagram and Twitter with the Joker and the pro-Palestine cleats and, you know, a quote that he'd had out there amongst some other things, there was a lot of hate and vitriol directed at Aziz immediately after that play on social media that I saw literally just an hour after the game. Maybe it was after the play, for that matter, about his views and political and religious beliefs, and that's what really prompted the type of response that we've all seen and talked about now on social media.
Well, yeah, I think, on the personal level of things, Aziz Alshire has been getting all kinds of hate poured into him and onto him, and probably, you know, even if he tries to stay off social media, I'm sure people are telling him all about it. And I guess that's the, how does Aziz Alshire react to it? And does he feel like, all right, well, fine, go, you know, everybody can go die. I don't give a damn. I could totally understand and get that. I think the more interesting thing from a Texans perspective as an organization is that in Caserio coming out as vocally critical of the league as he did, and D'Amico Ryans and being so supportive of Aziz Alshire, and actually kind of trying to put some blame onto the Jaguars themselves and their sideline management, all of that. The organization itself now is starting to kind of take on a villain role. And I'm always torn with stuff like this because I like it. I like it if you can embrace the anti-hero role. But as multiple people annoyingly pointed out to me when I brought that up, it's like, all right, well, listen, if you're the Raiders back in the day, or if you're the Astros as of late, it's a lot more fun to play the villain role when you're also actually winning championships.
Yeah.
And that's the missing part of the equation right here.
Sure.
But I think you got to remember with the Raiders, especially back in the 70s or whatever, that they were villains before they won their Super Bowl. And it was more of just the whole us against the world mentality and the way they operated, like the beginnings of all that I'd be cool with that. I don't mind being like looked at as the team that's, they're always pushing the line. They're just a little more violent than they should be. That if it's, as long as it does end up in a championship, I'm cool with that.
You're probably not going to remember this, but I do. You and I don't get a chance to do a lot of shows together, but it was probably in and around this time of the season last year that I brought it up. We had the conversation because, look, the defense was obviously looking really damn good. The football team was exceeding everybody's expectations at this point last year. And, look, the linebacker core consisted of a very surprising performance from Blake Cashman, and you had Denzel Perryman, who was, you know, brought a little bit of that nasty, that edge type player to him last season for the Texans. And I started to get the vibe and feel that, hey, you know what? The kind of player and culture, mindset, violence that D'Amico Ryans wants his defense to play with, we're starting to see that a little bit. And then look at the guys that they've continued to bring in this offseason. Look at the way that they're playing right now. And you could tell me if I'm flat ass wrong on this, but this is just my feel. D'Amico Ryans is a freaking artist. And I mean that in many ways. And I'll attack it first from a player perspective, because as a player, I don't know that anybody was maybe more, and we know this more now than maybe what we recall when we watched him play, because people talk about him now, but he was a violent, bad mofo on the football field, but he was soft-spoken,
yeah,
you know, very good with the media, very great in front of the cameras, and you know, just had a different type of aura off of the football field. He was able to switch it on and off, right? And I think Azeez Al-Shaair is very much like that. I think Jimmy Ward is very much like that. To a lesser degree, because he could still be a little abrasive off mic. Joe Mixon is kind of like that on the offensive side.
Yeah.
But I bring all that up because I told you last season around this time that I would not hate it at all if the Texans earned the kind of reputation for being slightly a bit of a dirty team. And it was right at around when they brought Kareem Jackson in. So it was a little later in the season, I believe it was. And they're there. Here they are.
So this is what I wonder, too. And I'll say this without emotion. I wonder if the league has specifically zeroed in on the Texans, because if you look at the players who have been suspended three games for unsportsmanlike conduct, or at least that being a big fueling part of it, Denzel Perryman last year was initially suspended three games. They dialed it back to two. Azeez Al-Shaair this year, suspended three games, not dialed back. Kareem Jackson last year, it wasn't his actions when he was on the Texans that caused him to be suspended three games when he was with the Broncos. But he did find his way to the Texans. So D'Amico, you know, has zero issue having players like that on his team. And I wonder if the team is looking at the Texans as, hey, man, all right, look, this is turning into a theme here, that you've got guys that you bring out the worst in them or the best in them.
Well,
whatever it might be. Perryman didn't have a really lengthy history before he got to the Texans.
No.
A lot of it just started when he got to the Texans. Yeah, they might already in the league be identified as, man, D'Amico's guys are a wild bunch, and we got to keep a close eye on them.
I'm going to see if I can go here responsibly. But again, please tell me if you think I'm wrong or off base here. But the way that I just described D'Amico Ryans as a player, now a former player and head coach, is the guys that he wants, I don't necessarily think he wants them to, you know, be him, but be like him, in the sense that he was a controlled yet violent player on the field, but operate in a gray area. And that is a very difficult thing to do sometimes. And it's even more difficult, I'd say, nowadays in respect to just the defender versus the quarterback that turns into a runner. We know this discussion. We know how this goes, right? We're living it and seeing it play out this week after the Trevor Lawrence hit. But see if you can follow me here. Like, D'Amico wants these guys, and it now is his responsibility as a leader on this defense and of the team to try and get them to operate efficiently in that gray area that's so damn dangerous. And it's a very difficult thing to do. And Aziz Alshire is in a position now that he has never been in his career. But he'd been handpicked. D'Amico knew him in Frisco and saw the promise. He saw what he was capable of last year within the division, and he's got him on this team now, and he is executing it perfectly. But if you recall, the one thing, and D'Amico has said this twice, once last year, I think it was in response to the Denzel Perryman suspension, and he said it earlier this year after Aziz Alshire had that sideline scuffle against the Bears week two, I think it was. We want that, but the one thing you can't do is get ejected because it costs you and it costs the team. It hurts the team. That's that gray area.
You know who the best example might be? And I've been thinking about this is, okay, coach who's widely regarded and respected as a stand-up dude, and yet his players are much different than that guy's public persona. Tom Osborne with the Nebraska Cornhuskers in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Those dudes were psychotic. So, but Tom Osborne, widely regarded and respected as almost like a grandfatherly type figure who does things the right way. Sean, I can tell you that I played with a few different guys who played on Tom Osborne's teams from that era. These guys were psychotic. Like, think about, okay, for guys our age listening, think about Tom Osborne's public persona as a coach versus Christian Peters, the defensive lineman. Like, couldn't be more divergent. And yet, they all played for Tom Osborne. Those black shirts on defense that would do stuff that, I mean, Sean, some of the stories about stuff that went down, like, it sounded like, these were stories like out of the program, like the parties that they had, the stuff that got kind of brushed under the rug by the local police, the violence at practice, and like the hazing and stuff that would go on.
Talk about the Wild West.
It was out of control.
Yeah,
and it wouldn't, there's no way it would fly in the modern era, but it can happen. And it was a magical run that the Nebraska Cornhuskers had when they had a lot of guys like that out there. I think that's kind of where D'Amico is right now. He's a Tom Osborne guy. And like, it's hard to manage, especially in today's world. But I think the sights of the NFL have kind of been leveled on the Texans right now, and they're going to be hyper vigilant about any transgressions. I think that Jimmy Ward, Jalen Petrie, the big hitters on this team.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be under extra scrutiny for the rest of the season.
And
maybe as long as D'Amico is the coach.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. But is that something that D'Amico Ryans in this defense is willing to kind of bend on? Or is this going to be something that, you know what, this is who we are. This is what I want this defense to ultimately be. Yeah, it sucks right now. But look, this is the culture. This is swarm your ass off right here, man. And I think honestly, Seth, and we'll probably end up talking about this a little bit later on, I think it's necessary. I think it's necessary with the way that things have gone with this team this year, the inefficiencies, the struggles that this offense is having. I don't know that you need to, you know, kind of change course, so to speak, in what you are teaching and preaching to this defense and how you want them to play and attack the opposition. Because I think the defense, if the Texans are going to ultimately accomplish or at least put themselves in position to accomplish what they've set out preseason, the defense is going to have to be the mofo. They're going to have to be the attacker. They're going to have to be a reason, maybe the reason they get there.
You know what? Okay, so when you talk about it in those terms, you think about the Ravens from their Super Bowl, their first Super Bowl in 2000. And that was a team that was led by its defense. You got a lesser quarterback than I think what C.J. Stroud can be, but they were able to do it with the defense. And likewise, that was a team that was getting Ray Lewis back from jail. They were psychotic. They pushed the envelope. They were very, very physical and very, very tough. Are they good enough as a defense to be that team? I don't think so. Not right now. And maybe they can be closer to it by the end of the season. But you're right. But how do they lean into that persona as they're also under extra scrutiny? I don't know.
Yeah, well, look, you can lean into it. Are you equipped? to do that.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah. Do you have the same horses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the question, I think. And we're going to have to see. And maybe it can be offset by a significant improvement, which we're going to have to see, if we're being honest, from the offense to kind of counteract some of that stuff going forward for the Texans. You asked the question a little bit earlier this segment, like, you know, maybe you don't know if you feel like the Texans, you know, should be like, are they really a villain team? Are they ready to embrace this? You know, to make it like more specific, does Azeez Al-Shaair really want to be the villain? Like, does he maybe want to be the poster child of this? You can make it whatever you want, in my opinion. But I'd said this earlier that when he says, hey, you want me to be the villain, I'll be the villain. To me, that has not a damn thing to do with football and has everything to do with a guy that is standing up for what he believes in religiously and politically, because that was the response for him on Twitter.
The anti-Islamic stuff was more so that probably hit him more harder than
absolutely
any of the actual football
and you know
stuff.
What? You know what's galvanizing that can translate to the football field is, hey, I guess, by the way, Tytus Howard's back on Twitter, because he was one of the ones that kind of had Azeez Al-Shaair's back on social. Mm-hmm. Kamari Lassiter, Will Anderson, Nico, I don't know if Nico Collins was, I can't remember. Jimmy Ward. There was a, you know, half dozen Texan players that kind of said, yeah, and championed, you know, that type of response from Azeez Al-Shaair. That brings me to one of my biggest concerns about this team, Seth, and it maybe kind of ties into something we're going to get to next segment, but are the Texans paying far too much attention and being distracted by the outside noise? I can tell you at least two occasions this season, we know that for a fact. We know it for a fact because they've acknowledged it. They've said it. The loss after the loss to the Vikings and what was said by D'Amico Ryans and multiple players after that game is reference to the outside noise. Got a little too big for their britches going into that game.
Yeah.
And look, that was the outside noise, the rat poison, if you will, that they kind of bit them there. And look, if we're being honest, the inside noise did as well, because they blamed, you know, the stadium atmosphere for a lot of their struggles.
Oh, yeah, the actual noise.
Yeah, the actual noise. That was a problem.
This team hates noise of any variety. But they cannot handle noise.
Right.
On social media or with actual decibels.
Right. Yeah. But it came up again. After the Titans game, you know,
you can't ever ignore it completely, but you at least got to have some high quality, like, construction site earplugs in. you got to dull it enough that you can operate your skid steer. Yeah.
What was the loss here recently that prompted another player meeting? I think it would have been the third.
I felt like they had 17 player meetings in the course of 3 days. Was it the Titans? I think it was after the Titans.
No. It was the Jets game, I believe. It was lost to the.
What prompted the initial, like, the big one that was reported?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think it was the Jets game. Could have been the Lions game. Hell, I don't know. By count, at least what was reported, they've at least had four. And we've gotten a couple of them confirmed by Jimmy Ward, who said, yeah, we'll probably have another one. But, you know, for a team that has unpromptedly said and referenced outside noise as being a factor, showing up with too low of energy in games and not having killer instinct, all things that really very transparent Jimmy Ward has said on the postgame mm-hmm. show here on Sports Radio 610 with Pendergast and Sterner. That to me is a problem, because the expectations of this team is at record high, and now you've got multiple occasions in the most pivotal season in franchise history that your team can't handle the outside noise and for whatever reason is paying far too much attention to it. And the Azeez Al-Shaair response on social media, albeit non-football related, really is what has me a little bit more concerned these days.
Well, and I think a question I've gotten from some listeners that kind of surprised me, and then The Drive did a segment on it yesterday, asking a question basically, has D'Amico lost control of the team? Very interesting question that caught me by surprise. It is a bye week, so there is no official injury this news. Normally, our injury report would be brought to you by Mokarem Injury Lawyers. So I'll give you that injury report. First, a little bit optimistically. Christian Harris, who's been out with a Kyle Tucker like lower leg injury that we know nothing about. The name was brought up unprompted by Nick Caserio a couple times, so there's a chance that Christian Harris might return after the bye week. Hopefully we find out something about Jalen Petrie and his partially torn pec. And for anybody who cares, Trevor Lawrence, as you know, was put on IR and will have shoulder surgery to end his season, something that's obviously evident should have probably been done before he entered that Texans game and was playing like garbage the entire first half. Almost the entire first half. Injured in a car accident that wasn't your fault? Call McCarum Injury Lawyers at 281-222-2222.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
I'm so freaking proud of you, man. That's the way to show up. You talk about pressure, we live in pressure. That's where we freaking thrive. You did it again. All right? It doesn't matter who's playing for us. It doesn't matter what's going on. You always find a way to win. This has been in the making, man. This has been in the making. All right? We were all supposed to be here together, man. We're destined for this. Just stay the course.
Yeah, let's go, Football Friday. Well, Dan Campbell for you. Wake your ass up at 8:27 in the morning. Holy smokes. I got fired up last night just watching that game. And then afterwards seeing that post-game speech from Dan Campbell on the Lions, 34-31. Very dramatic, because that's how they do it. Victory over the Green Bay Packers last night. That, Seth Payne, is an individual that nobody, at least since he started 0-5 in his tenure as Lions head coach a few years ago, is questioning his control of his football team. May not always agree with some of his brass balls decisions late in games to go for it, but everybody, I think, certainly did after the fact last night, going forward on 4th and inches, just to make damn certain that Jordan Love wasn't going to have any opportunity, at least in regulation, to lead his Packers team down the field to tie or win a game.
Yeah, and Jordan Love had after a really moribund first half, it clicked in the second half. So I think that's where sometimes it's just too easy sometimes to say, oh, you don't trust your defense or this or that when it comes down to end of game decisions. It's always a game by game scenario, and I don't think anybody on the Lions probably ever thinks, oh, Dan Campbell doesn't trust us or anything. I think that the ability of Dan Campbell to be the guy that he was right from the initial press conference and for it to work out is more the exception than the rule. I think usually when you get guys that are the, hey, we're going to go in and we're going to do it with gusto and I'm going to be this leader of men and everything, and he's not an X's and O's genius or anything like that, people are skeptical of that. And people are skeptical of biting kneecaps and all of those other things. Yeah. Campbell is very much created a team that has taken on his identity. And they play that way on both offense and defense. I don't really think of him as an offensive-minded head coach, because he's not the offensive brains behind that operation. That'll be the really big test for him, is if Ben Johnson ever leaves Detroit. I don't know. It feels like Ben Johnson might not ever leave unless he gets the perfect landing spot.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's when you watch Dan Campbell, you know, there's a lot of elements to what you hope you get out of DeMeco Ryans, where DeMeco is a very, very good defensive coordinator. That's established, but it's his ability to have the entire team take it on his identity that is a kind of what he was as a player, what he stands for as a coach. Can he get the offense to buy into that? Because I don't think he's bought. I don't think the offense isn't playing like a DeMeco Ryans personality team. I think the defense 100% is playing. Maybe a little too much.
Yeah.
Maybe a little too much. But that's going to be the big question. Can he do for the Texans what Dan Campbell did for the Lions?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And look, TBD, we're watching it. We're seeing it play out. It will or it won't. You mentioned something real quick, just as a sidebar. You mentioned Ben Johnson. I am really hoping that he doesn't go anywhere for a few years. Now, I don't want the Lions to, you know, rattle off like 2 Super Bowl championships in the next 3 or 4 years or anything. I'd like the Texans to be in the mix on a couple of those at least, right? But the reason why I say that is because I want the conversation, or at least it to be a good point, to go back and say, you know what? Why couldn't we have said the same damn thing? I mean, a lot of people did, but nobody wanted to hear it. They wanted to make it about race. But I want to be able to say, like, why couldn't that have been the case with Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City? Like, why couldn't that guy have been content working with one of the best head coaches and the best quarterbacks in Kansas City and winning Super Bowls and winning AFC championship games every freaking year? Like, why would he want to do anything else? Like, and if the guy really wanted a job, don't you think the reports of him being, you know, just ass in job interviews wouldn't have been a thing? Like, he's probably like, yeah, if I get the job, I get the job. But yeah. Like he's going in there, I ain't going to wear a three-piece suit, mofos. You know, it's like, if you like me, you like me kind of a thing. I want Ben Johnson to, like, stay in Detroit just so people can say, be like, you know what? Yeah, there is something to, like, seeing this thing out and, you know, just doing a lot of winning in the role that he has.
I mean, okay, so two guys that come to mind, Bruce Arians and then also why am I blanking on his name? Defensive coordinator, current defensive coordinator for the Cowboys, former head coach of the Vikings.
Aaron Glenn. Former head coach of the...
Mike Zimmer. So Mike Zimmer forever was like, how come this guy can't get a job as a head coach? Because he had really good defenses with the Bengals forever. I loved him as a defensive coordinator. But it was like, for him, it was, he has a really gruff personality. It didn't seem like... Same with Bruce Arians. Like, I don't know if he's a head coach material. Those guys went on to do well as head coaches. Bruce Arians, obviously, especially. But I think that with Ben Johnson, what you hope, this is what I'm always on the lookout for. All right, who's the coordinator out there who's established himself as a really good coordinator, but people really don't think of him as a head coach because he's failed as a head coach already? Josh McDaniels comes to mind. You know, there's a guy that has done really good things, including with Mac Jones. Got really good performance out of Mac Jones as an offensive coordinator. But as a head coach, I don't think he gets another opportunity. I think that's done for. I think he's just shown too many glaring weaknesses as a head coach. So I think some team out there might end up getting Josh McDaniels and doing some good things with him. I think likewise, if you look on the defensive side of the ball, Dick LeBeau, I don't think, maybe didn't even want to be a head coach again, but probably also wasn't getting another opportunity. And for decades, he was one of the best defensive coordinators in the league.
Yeah.
So that's where Sean and I were talking about this yesterday. You kind of look around at, okay, who are the guys who might get fired this year? And Kevin Stefanski is a guy that I think if he did get fired, I would want him immediately.
I heard you say this, yeah.
But also, I think he might get another opportunity as a head coach. I think a lot of owners are out there going to look at him as like, okay, it's not his fault that Deshaun Watson was in the building and performed the way he did.
Absolutely. Great point by you.
So I don't want to bring a guy in that you're just going to lose 1 year later.
No, but if you're the Texans and there's any trepidation about Bobby Slowick and his future, you should absolutely be looking his way for an offensive coordinator spot.
But as far as whether, because the question was asked by a few listeners, but then also I know it was a topic on the drive yesterday, has D'Amico lost control of the team?
Yeah.
I think defensively, that's exactly, I don't think he's lost control of them at all. I think they're playing and performing exactly the way he wants
to. I'm right there with you, yes.
I don't look at the melee afterwards as D'Amico somehow having lost control of the team, because the melee was specifically Aziz Alshire and a bunch of guys trying to hold Aziz Alshire back. And D'Amico and Aziz have the same relationship they've ever had. They're very open about how they'll butt heads and everything, but they love each other. I think that all of that... So one of our listeners said, well, Seth, you know, like, I mean, he couldn't control Aziz. Isn't that evidence that he's losing control of the entire team if he can't control Aziz? And my thought was, as it's always been, go ahead and try to talk somebody that you love and care about. Go ahead and try to talk them out of a rage in 45 seconds. You know, like, go get them to stop being angry in 45 seconds. Your love has nothing to do with it.
Like, no, you're not, you know what? Like, that's a great point.
Yeah, not like, go ahead and try to. That bull loves me. I'll get him to stop bucking. Like, no, there's certain things you just can't control in 45 seconds.
I'm 100% with you. I just said it last segment that I think this is, you know, in large part, the iteration of kind of character or a perception or just way that he wants this defense to play. There's that gray area. You know, it's kind of like, hey, we want to toe the line, but we can't cross it. That's going to hurt you, yourself, the individual, or the team. You know, like in terms of like being ejected or suspended and things like that. But it's funny, even like, all right, can you kind of, you know, bring a player that's in a full on outrage that just got trampled by an entire football team in Azeez Alshire? Can you remove him from a situation and say, all right, big cat, go shower up. We'll see you in a few after we get this done.
Right.
Like, you know what? He almost did. Because you go back and look at that video, like when D'Amico and Will Anderson are walking off of the field, like he's got him kind of calmed down. He's talking to him a little bit, and there's something that's said. He hears, he gets distracted. D'Amico turns his back, he leaves Azeez, and then boom. You know,
those guys, and this is where it's annoying too, is, and again, to point out to guys like Stephen A. Smith and others that the melee afterwards was not just Azeez Alshire.
Right.
And to point out, look, Caserio wasn't saying that there shouldn't have been a suspension. It's that he doesn't think it should have been a 3-game suspension. They used the melee and pointed to that as evidence. All right, he was getting into it with a Jaguars player who was down in the end zone,
mm-hmm.
like following him out of the tunnel. So how are you acting like Azeez is the instigator in that regard?
Right.
And then not to mention that, look, Evan Engram barreled. At the moment, Azeez didn't think he did anything wrong, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, and then he gets barreled into from behind by Evan Engram.
In a millisecond.
And as of yet, we haven't seen a fine come out of that. Like, that's, like, to paint it out 100%. Like Azeez was the only guy in the wrong there in the melee, I don't think that's, I don't think that that matches any of the actual evidence that we have.
No, look, Engram, fine. Where is it? Jerrion Jones, fine. Where? Well, I guess he was ejected, so he's probably going to be fine de facto anyway.
Yeah.
Saturday but Scherf,
afternoon is usually when the fines come down, so we'll see.
Sure, the guy that Azeez Alshire was chirping at, you know, that kind of went, you know, caused the 2.0 version of that. It's like, where's the fine there? Like, where's the instigation? Like, at least give me a BS John Runyon letter that's published, made public, you know, that says, hey, you know, Scherf, you did this, and on video, you went and instigated this. Like, we know we're not going to get that, because according to John Runyon, it was Azeez Alshire, you know, with the hit. It was Azeez Alshire with the melee. It was Azeez Alshire that continued the melee. All of that stuff. It was his fault. Everything.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. 713-572-4610. Talking about coaches losing control of their team. You and I are on the same page, Seth, that, you know, the team and really the defense has taken on D'Amico's, you know, ethos, if you will. I think the Rockets have kind of started to do the same thing with Ime Udoka. I want to talk about that and what this Rockets team's ceiling is coming up next. It's Sports Radio 610. Stay there.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast along with Seth Payne this morning. Appreciate you joining us. If you'd like to be a part of the show, hit us up, 713-572-4610, the 5-hour energy fan line open. 5-hour energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. Not necessarily per request, but just by happenstance, Seth, we got a number of people saying, I want to know Seth's opinion and thoughts on what Stephen A. Smith has had to say about the Azeez Alshire. And I was like, well, keep listening because we're going to do that at 9 a.m. So keep it locked in here.
I pulled a couple of his clips just this morning, actually. Yeah, and we'll play where Stephen A. Smith does what he does so well, just very eloquently taking half of the information and blowing it up into something without actually understanding the whole scenario. Yeah, he lambasted Nick Caserio, and I'll be honest, he and Jeff Saturday made some good points, but also got a few things egregiously wrong. So. Mm-hmm. We'll play that for you in the next segment.
Coming up at 9 a.m. Right now, though, Rockets coming off a loss last night to the Golden State Warriors, 99-93. Very gettable game for them, Seth. It's off to a really poor shooting start. And typically when that's been the case, you know, this season or even last season, it's been hard for them to kind of respond and rebound. Though I thought they did a really good job of that here in recent weeks where Alpi himself got off to some slow starts, but ended up being the dude.
This is the first time all season they've had back-to-back losses. I mean, it's so especially going into a Warriors game where they don't have their two stud players. It's not the best version of the Warriors. They're coming off of a loss. The Rockets are coming off of a loss. I didn't expect them to come out and go for two for 16 to start the game shooting. Except they like they're a bad shooting team. But it's the lack of a presence defensively and the sum total of things that's a disappointment. It's kudos to the Rockets for getting to a point where I can be disappointed in their performance in that regard, because I think this isn't who they've been for most of the season, but they didn't look like the gritty, tough team that they've played like for the majority of the season so far.
No, they haven't. And I was disappointed in that last night and I told you this earlier today, when Ime Udoka calls, you know, last night's game one of the softest, you know, that he's seen his team play. I think the reason for that is more than just about the game itself, but it's about the lead up. You're coming off of easily your most quality win this season over the weekend against the Thunder. And then, you know, a very highly, emotional game in the fourth quarter where Udoka and Şengün both get teed up, ejected. That was a difficult game. Look, they experienced a really horrid stretch in the third quarter that ultimately cost them the game. I know you could point to plenty of things in the first half the other night that also contributed to the Rockets losing a game that they had no business losing against the Sacramento Kings. But I thought maybe a galvanizing moment because, you know, Udoka sounded off on the officials and had his players' backs and, you know, lauded him for, you know, being gritty and stuff to this point this season. I think he was fully expecting himself to come out, you know, just kind of with a fire lit up under their ass last night in facing a team without Draymond Green, without Steph Curry, in a situation where you feel like, you know what, it's time to write the check, because you hadn't lost back-to-back games until last night.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the response, even as they start off so bad offensively, it's all right. Then you can't always make all your shots, but you can play physical and you can grab rebounds. You can attack the rim. You can do all these things. The fact that the Rockets didn't do that was surprising. It was, but the thing that I take out of it, and I think I'm most optimistic about when it comes to, all right, the composition of your team is that, look, Jalen Green's going to be, streaky. He was 4 for 16 last night. Şengün hasn't been the same guy offensively for the last 5 or 6 games. But you do have the veteran leadership of, like, Van Vliet after the game basically agrees with Udoka. Yeah. And that, all right, yeah, he said we're soft. Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. I like that.
I do, too.
I mean, you look at the Patriots earlier this season. Gerard Mayo calls his defense soft, and people act like he had murdered a puppy or something. Oh, how could you say that about this defense? Like, I don't know. It's a coach talking about his team. It's not the same as... you're not committing a crime or anything in describing how you think your team is playing.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise with Udoka, I don't think anybody, you know, and Udoka's got more of a track record as a head coach than Gerard Mayo did at the time, obviously, and has done very well as he's the current NBA coach of the month. I like that Van Vliet doesn't shy away from that criticism whatsoever.
Right.
And basically agrees with it. And I trust that they're going to figure it out. And then sometime as the schedule gets tougher, they got to be more consistently the best version of their tough and physical self.
And great points. I think it's pretty interesting that we're watching both the Texans and the Rockets go through a little bit of a stage in the course of their season at different stages. But right now, where they're galvanizing opportunities for both of them, you know, coming off of a week in which if you can afford a distraction like the one that the Azeez Alshire hit has, created, well, do it during the bye week. When you kind of want to get all that over and done with. But at a point where the Rockets have, you know, stacked some wins, put themselves in pretty good position and in conversation, probably more nationally, if we're being honest, than even here locally in terms of people paying attention to this team, I think it's going to start to come locally. But the Rockets clearly have taken on the personality of Ime Udoka, and he's very much leaning into that. And I think the Texans as a team, specifically the defense, has taken on the personality of D'Amico Ryans. But who's going to flourish more by leaning into that? So I ask you this question in regards to the Rockets. Has their ceiling coming into this season now become their floor?
Oh, yeah. I guess what was the ceiling coming into the season?
I think the ceiling, in my opinion, my vibe was just get the play in. But through the first 21-22 ball games, they've very much been operating in and around the 3-4-5 seed territory within the West.
The second seed right now. Yeah, if the playoffs started, if all of a sudden there was a pandemic and we had to bubble up and start the playoffs today, the Rockets are the number two seed. So it's more a matter of, okay, can they sustain that? Whereas with the Texans, it's the ceiling was, well, this might be a Super Bowl team. And now you're like, well, they're in the AFC South. So they're probably going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And yet also are the third team in the AFC right now. Mm-hmm. So that's the Rockets. It feels more promising in terms of the total package, the hope for the future and everything else. Boy, who's done more to live up to the preseason expectations? I think the Rockets emphatically have more than lived up the preseason expectations, even for the most optimistic, and the most optimistic of Rockets fans wouldn't have predicted that this is where they'd be sitting right now.
I don't know. You know, them red rowdies are a crazy bunch.
Good point. Good point. All right. Let's say if you separate the people who are always doom and gloom or the people who are always convinced you win a championship, I would say like at that upper echelon of optimism, this is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that the Rockets, I think, have surpassed that. Whereas with the Texans, we've already reduced our standard for what we're hoping for by the end of the year to, hey, can we get competent and consistent offensive performances? Where early in the season, or early in the offseason, people wanted, where they were lusting after, hey, can we get three wide receivers that have over 1,000 yards receiving? Can C.J. Stroud be all pro? All those things. C.J. Stroud's not going to be all pro this season. Neither will Pat Mahomes, so it's not an indictment of his entire career or anything. But, yeah, the offense has fallen way short. And then because of it, yeah, the sum total of where the Texans are right now, it doesn't feel nearly as good as I think the optimistic Texans fans would have thought. There's a bunch out there, guys, people telling me right now that they knew that the Texans weren't ready for primetime. I get it. But the ceiling is definitely not where they thought it was going to be.
That's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. You want to talk about competency. What about incompetency? We'll get Seth's take and we'll give you ours collectively on, well, Stephen A. Smith getting into his bag and his thoughts on Nick Caserio and the whole Azeez Alshire situation. We'll have that audio and reaction for you next at Sports Radio 610.